Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Dagnan. This week, we're going to find out how you can volunteer for the American Red Cross, whether it's help with the blood drive or many of the other things that they are involved in, or even if you would like to make a monetary contribution. Grace Palmer is here and she'll tell us all about it. Also today on Special Edition, we'll hear from Justin Behrens. He is the Executive Director and CEO of Keystone Mission. But first, we're going to start off by talking with Dr. Helen Boucher. She is the Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Dr. Boucher will be discussing the latest information available on safety, side effects, distribution, and availability. Dr. Boucher, let's talk about, first of all, what your role is at Tufts Medical Center. What are you dealing with there?
Well, I have the privilege of leading a large division of over 30 faculty in infectious diseases and also our efforts across our healthcare system. And as you can well imagine, for the last year, now more than a year, my efforts have largely been focused on COVID, treating patients, working on all of our testing and prevention measures, and now focusing on vaccination rollout.
And that vaccination rollout has been getting an awful lot of discussion. I know here in Pennsylvania, our governor talking about the need for the vaccines. From your perspective, how do you look at all this?
Well, I look at it as that we are hopefully in the last big push through the surge upon a surge, and thankfully have two things that are going to help us get through it. The first is a vaccine that is 95% effective, and the second are the mitigation measures that we know work, that wearing a mask, avoiding crowds, washing our hands, staying home when we're sick. Those measures work, and we're going to have to continue to use them until we get enough people vaccinated that this virus will stop spreading.
Let's talk a little bit about the vaccination itself, because again, there have been a lot of very high profile people who have demonstrated that they have gotten the vaccine on television and they're getting the word out there. But what do you say to those who are still concerned about the vaccine and possible side effects?
Yeah, well, you know, these concerns are very much understandable. And I think, you know, there's a couple of pieces of good news that we can offer. So the vaccines have been studied incredibly rigorously in many, many thousands, right? Over 44,000 for one, over 37,000 for another. And all of the data has been vetted externally at the level of the FDA and the CDC and during the trials by external experts. So we know that the data about efficacy and safety are robust and credible. And then now we have experience in many millions who received the vaccines, and we haven't seen any new or really unexpected side effects. The side effects are largely mild, muscle aches, maybe a low fever for 1 to 2 days, things that are a small price to pay for a life saved.
One of the things that we're also hearing is when it comes to side effects that, and I, you tell me whether it's true or false, but one of the things is that if you don't have any side effects, maybe it's not working as well as it did if you did get some?
Yeah, well, that's interesting, right? The side effects are related to what we call immune activation, the immune system working. So in many ways, it's kind of a good sign to get side effects. We also see them more often in younger people who tend to have more robust immune systems. But the good news is that we know the effectiveness is just as good, that 95% in older folks and folks who have fewer side effects. So I don't think you need to worry if you don't get the side effects.
When we're talking about the shots as well, there's been a lot of concern as far as the rollout is coming along, and there are a lot of people who are finding it. I know in our area, just looking for myself to see what I could find, that there have been some places to sign up online where you're in line with over 5,000 other people. How about the rollout, Dr. Boucher? Is that going to make a difference in, because again, you're also talking about one vaccine followed by a second vaccine. So a lot of people who are having a hard time getting the first one might not get it because they're afraid that they won't get the second one.
Yeah. So Paula, you know, as is happening in Scranton, it's happening all over the country, that the rollout is a little bit bumpy. And I think that, you know, the notion of vaccinating 330 million Americans is a huge undertaking. Again, I think there is good news that, you know, just as recently as yesterday, President Biden announced the purchase of 200 million additional doses of these two mRNA vaccines. We also have another vaccine hopefully coming, the J&J Janssen vaccine. We hope to see data next week. And I think that it will get smoother as time goes along. I think a lot of the efforts that are being made and causing the slow start are to ensure that that second dose is available. So I would encourage people not to worry about that and to accept the vaccine when it's offered and to be faithful and reassured that that second dose, that every measure is being taken to ensure that that second dose will be there when you need it.
And when we're talking about the whole idea of those who need the vaccine, there is also concern that some people may not get it because they aren't going to be readily easy to get if they're at a different location, and some people have mobility issues. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, you know, there is a lot of concern, Paul, about making sure that we provide access to vaccination for the people who need it most, right? We know that there are disparities in that COVID affects a disproportionate number of people who are socioeconomically disadvantaged and people of color. So a lot of efforts are being made, both from the federal down to the state level, to really do that outreach, to provide vaccines in community health centers, nursing homes, places where people are, to meet people where they are, so that people who do have things like mobility issues don't have to worry that they won't have access to that vaccine.
Along the same lines, one of the other things that has come to light in recent days is the fact that there are so many people that are trying to get the vaccine that sometimes there have been reports of, well, why is this person getting it and I'm not getting it? And is that a concern?
Well, you know, I understand, you know, where those concerns are coming from. I think, again, the good news is that we have every reason to believe now, based on information from as recently as yesterday, that there's going to be enough vaccine to vaccinate everybody. We're just going to need to be patient during this period of getting it out there. And, you know, it will take a few months to get the whole population vaccinated. And so that's why it's really important that we double down on those mitigation measures, masking up whenever we're with anyone with whom we don't live, washing our hands, watching our distance, not going to work or school when we're sick. These are very, very important measures that work and that will get us through until enough people have been vaccinated, the virus will stop spreading.
And then there's also been the, well, I already had COVID, so I guess that means I don't need the vaccine.
Well, that's, you know, an important point for us to address. So we understand, and it's quite clear now, that there is some immunity provided from natural infection, right, for at least 3 months, maybe longer. But it's not 100% that it's as robust as the vaccine. So we are encouraging folks who've had COVID to get the vaccine as soon as they're released from isolation. And of course, the reason we're doing all this is so that no more people will get the disease and we'll be able to prevent further disease.
Also, there have been people who have said, I tested positive for COVID, but I don't have any symptoms. So maybe I don't need it either.
Right. I would say the same thing, whether you've tested positive or been sick, we still very much encourage you to get vaccinated when it's offered.
Dr. Boucher, as we're wrapping up here, is there anything that you would like to leave with our listeners so that they are feeling comfortable about all this that's happening?
Yeah, you know, I would say that, you know, we still have some dark days ahead, but there is light at the end of this tunnel. If we can hang in there for the next several weeks, we're going to get to a better place and we're going to get beyond this back to more normal life. If you want to get more information, you can check out our website, which is www.fightinfectiousdisease.org/vaccination. There's some nice infographics and other information for you and your family.
Keystone Mission next on Special Edition. Now meet Justin Behrens with the Keystone Mission. Justin, explain to our listeners who or what or both is Keystone Mission.
Keystone Mission is actually a nonprofit faith-based organization that truly is out there to help end poverty and homelessness. What we want to do is go out to the community, reach out to those that are broken, those that are hurt, those that are hungry, those that are just homeless, and really try to get them back on their feet and get them back on track and give them hope and give them a chance to be a better life.
Now, where did Keystone Mission come from?
That's a really interesting question. Actually, it started about 15 years ago when a pastor from California chose on the map that he wanted to help northeastern Pennsylvania's homeless. He started doing a food truck on the back of his truck, handing out food, and then it morphed into getting a building over here in Scranton. And then Scranton, they started delivering the food, and then it morphed into getting Wilkes-Barre and doing the exact same thing. And then it came into where they decided to do distribution, handing out food and clothing. And just recently, we now started on a Team Agape program, which goes out into the community and meets the homeless in their element and uses critical time intervention right then and there and tries to fix the problems or work on fixing the problems to get them back on track.
Give me a little bit more background on the priest. Why was he in California and decided Northeast Pennsylvania would be a focus?
So he actually had a calling. He felt that God put on his heart that he needed to help the homeless. And he really thought that northeastern Pennsylvania was the location to have that happen. I recall one story that I heard that when he came over here, he faced a lot of troubles. He was not getting the shelter that he wanted to be built. The community wasn't ready, prepared to take care of the homeless. And, he was facing a lot of struggles. And I remember there was a story where he was crying in the hotel room, called his wife, and his wife's like, "This is your calling. You got to stay there." And he kept fighting and plugging away. And now 15 years later, we have an established organization.
Wow. It's just amazing that he would pick Northeast Pennsylvania. So how did you get involved then?
So I've always been in the social service fields. My passion is helping those that are hurting and those that are in need. And Keystone Mission was looking for an executive director and CEO. And I was like, you know, give it a shot and see. I love the mission that they stand for. I love the passion they are. And I love being that voice for the homeless. The voice of the homeless don't really get to speak. They don't get to talk a lot. But if people think about the typical homeless person, you know, they come look like they're disheveled, they're dirty, that they're just, you know, drug users or criminals. And that's truly not the story. And they need their voice being spoken. And I'm here to make sure that their voice can be heard and that we can provide the services that they need to get better and back on track.
Before we get into that, maybe you can just give us a rundown of, you mentioned locations and how somebody would be able to get in touch with you, whether they need help themselves, know someone, maybe they'd like to help you. What would be your contact information?
So we have two locations. We have one here in Scranton, which is on 8 West Olive Street. And then we also have one in Wilkes-Barre, which is on 290 Parkview Circle. Both those locations are open from 9 o'clock a.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. Monday through Friday. We have a phone number, and I'll give you the phone number right now. It's 570-871-4795. And that number can be called, and what it'll do is that it will automatically get you connected to the Team Agape. The Team Agape are those vehicles I talked about that go out into the community and reach in the population outside. So if they're homeless or if they're in need of help, they can come to our vehicles, and our vehicles will be parked in different locations throughout Luzerne and Lackawanna County. And they're marked. They have the big, huge branding on the side that says Keystone Mission on there, so you can't miss it. But they're parked. Just come on up, talk to them. We have life coaches that are there, and they're there to help you right then and there. In those vehicles are going to be printers. There's computers, telephones, enough to get things working. It's like a mobile office, if you want to say, to get them moving in the right direction.
Wow. And again, you're like a golden nugget that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with unless they happen to hear about you. And you did an opportunity. You did have an opportunity in part of last year where you did something which I thought was, kudos to you, was very unique, was getting the word out by going live on Facebook. For anybody who may have seen that, or maybe they did see it and they just didn't realize it was you, can you give us the background of that?
Yeah, so I actually got this this vision of doing this because here at Keystone Mission, our goal is to build a transformation center. We want to build a location where they can live 24/7, get back on track and teach them the skills. We've hit a lot of roadblocks in the community, and one of them is actually the individuals in the community are not informed of truly what the homeless are. And so I wanted to call out and really challenge the community of Luzerne and Lackawanna County to say, what is the issues that are afraid of, the fears that you have, and let me address them. And let me talk to them, and let's talk one-on-one. That's how things should be done, is we can agree to disagree, but let's listen to each other's opinions, and let's talk about that. So I came up with the concept that I was going to spend 12 hours in Scranton and 12 hours in Wilkes-Barre at different locations, and I was going to talk about homelessness. And that's what I did for 24 hours. I just talked about homelessness and called out anybody that wanted to sit with me and talk to them. So we had multiple different people that came. I had people that were volunteers. I had staff members. I had donors that donate to Keystone Mission. I had guests that were homeless when they came to Keystone Mission and are now living in apartments that talked about their story with me. Jim was one of them that came out. I also had politicians that came out. I had someone that was running for U.S. Congress, state representatives, council members, mayors. And what was interesting about that was we talked about the issues. We got to hear the stories. I got to tell them what the homeless were truly about. They got to tell me their fears. And I tried to put some of that at ease. I want people to know that they're everyday humans, that they are everyday. This could be you, me. It could be your brother, your sister. They say, well, you're one paycheck away from being homeless. That is 100% true. And we want them to understand that they're just humans that are trying to get back on track. And how can we work together as a community, right? Not as Keystone Mission, not as the government, not as all the other agencies that are out there, but as a community with the agencies, the government, and Keystone Mission together as one to help these individuals. And that's the whole mission of that whole project that I did. And I'll be doing it again next year and hopefully from years on end, because I think it's important that people have the opportunity to talk and really get what they have on their chest out, and then let's talk about it.
Was there a common thread that people came to you with when you asked them, what was your vision? What was your, you know, of homelessness?
I think the common theme that we got from almost everyone that we talked to was there's a problem with homelessness here in northeastern Pennsylvania. No one denied that. The problem was, where do we put a place to help them? And I said to them, what was their fears of that? Why is that a question? And they're like, well, they're going to cause crime and they're going to cause all this havoc. And I said, we have shelters all across this nation, and there's hardly any violence or any crime in any of those locations. They want a place to sleep. They want a place to get better. They want a place to move in the right direction. And that was what we got to address. But it was really, truly the number two themes of the whole thing was, is they all admit that there's a problem of homelessness. But the bottom line is, where do you put a homeless shelter? Where do you put a homeless transformation center? Where can that be? And everyone obviously comes up with ideas. But I'm right now done with the ideas. I want to move forward and get to a direction where we can actually make this happen and make it a reality.
So what's your goal?
Keystone Mission is, I've been here as executive director and CEO for about 18 months now. And I see a lot of things, and I saw directions. The first thing is that we as a community need to start taking our egos and hanging out on the coat rack and start working as a community. all of us have a special niche. Every agency that's out there, whether it's mental health, whether it's drug and alcohol, whether it's healthcare, whether it's careers, whatever it is, they have their niche and they know how to do it well. We need to bring everybody on board working in one goal to help end homelessness. And I think that's the first step of this whole thing. So how are we going to do that? I have a concept that we want to start, and we're going to start trying to look at this, is building day centers, right? Where the homeless can come during the day, get cleaned up, be treated like an everyday human individual, and provide that relief that they need. That initial relief, which gives them that opportunity to, you know, the stuff that makes them have the struggles in life, the food, the clothing, the health, the
friendship.
Showering.
Friendship.
Right. Yeah. Relationship. Mm-hmm. Right. And build that together. And then once we do that, let's get them now into the transformation center, a place where they can start learning a skill, learning a trade, learning the life skills that they need to move forward. But continuing, like you just said, building the relationships, and then move them into an apartment or a place that's stable enough that they can live on their own and be followed with the relationships that they built. And so Keystone Mission wants to be that relationship builder. We don't want to be the ones that do mental health. We don't want to be the ones that do drug and alcohol. We've got experts in there. We want to bring them on board with us. But you know what we're experts at? Building relationships. And that's what we want to do.
You had there was going to be a conference coming up in January, but unfortunately with the COVID-19 situation, that kind of derailed things until the spring. And again, I read about that and I thought that is never been done before as far as I can remember. But can you talk a little bit about that and hopefully get people looking toward the spring when it will actually come to fruition?
I believe you're talking about the Commission Cares committee.
Right.
So I sit on that Commission's Care Committee. The concept that came to my mind was we have all these food banks. We have all these clothing banks. And people come in there. They get their food. They get their clothing. They leave. And then the next month, we see them again. And they get their food and they get their clothing. And then next month, we see them again. If we're truly trying to help people get off from not going to food banks and clothing banks, then we're failing at this. We're just enabling them to keep coming, get the food and clothing that they need and not getting better. So I made the suggestion, why don't we bring them for the food and clothing, which what they need is relief, but at the same time, give them an opportunity to meet all those agencies all as one around there where they can have like almost like a one-stop shop and they can go and they can say, you know what? Hey, I'm Justin. I got issues with drug and alcohol and mental health and trying to find a job. Oh, look, here's an agency that does mental health. Oh, here's an agency that does drug and alcohol. Oh, here's someone that'll help me with my job. Meet with all them. There's the incentive. And the incentive then is you get your food and your clothing. And now we're not giving away anything for free anymore. We're now putting a value behind it. And the value is getting them the help and hope that they need from agencies in the community.
That is a very good concept. Because again, I think a lot of people will talk about homelessness, and you're right. In the very beginning of our discussion, you said the way that people will perceive other people. And if they're perceived like that, they may not come forward for help, but it takes a bit to get trust and other things, and that's what you're for. So you're hoping that this is going to happen sometime in the spring.
Correct. And obviously the committee is going to work as hard as they can to make this happen. And we're going to publicize it and get it out there to the public so that everybody knows about that. But you bring up a very good point. 90% of all homeless do not show up to their first appointment.
Right.
And so I asked them that. These are the questions I asked. During COVID, back in March, I actually quarantined myself with roughly about 41 homeless individuals here in Scranton. I lived with them for 2 months straight without going home. I stayed in the same place with them. And I talked to them and I wanted to get a feel for what was going on and tried to help them get back on track as much as I could. And the thing they told me was, I said, why do you miss your appointments? I said, we work as hard as we can to get appointments for you guys. And then you don't show up to it. It's because they lost that trust. They lost the feeling that, you know what, I'm being judged when I get there because I'm homeless. Why would I want to go to this place and go further? And that's why Keystone Mission is trying to be that relationship builder, be that connection and be that bond between the two, and then let the agency fly. a lot of times people don't go to the agency. They go to the person that works in that agency. And if we can build that bond and that relationship, we won't have that no-show rate. So we're trying to turn that 90% down to make sure that a lot more people make their first appointments.
Well, and again, I think that many people do have that perception of if I go in, they're going to know and I'm not this way or that way. And what a good concept to bring down to the fact that we're basically all the same and we're all trying to do the same thing. Did you also find in your work so far that you've been doing for the past 18 months, the different situations that brought people to where they are?
Yeah. So the number one issue is, well, let me just go through. There's a couple of things. One is obviously a loss of a job, right? And especially with this COVID time and the economic struggles that people are having, we saw an increase in that. The other issue that we're seeing is that it's a spiraling effect, right? People lose relationships. They might not be connected to their family anymore. They might not be connected to friends. And they replace those relationships with obviously something that gives them that same feeling that of self-worth and that they're important, and that's drugs. So they chemically induce themselves to make them feel special and feel important. And then they start getting in that vicious cycle of being related to drugs. So drug and alcohol is another issue that's out there. Surprisingly, and this is something that people don't recognize, is domestic violence. A lot of women are out there that are getting abused or getting hurt in their family setting, and they'd rather be homeless than live in that environment. And so we're seeing some of that going out there. So that was a very big interest point too. Then there's also the other things where they're kicked out of the home, right? My family doesn't like me, or my family doesn't want me anymore, and they get kicked out. Age bracket wise, right? Mm-hmm. We're seeing that majority of them are either very, very young. So we're looking at the 18 to 25 year old age range, or the opposite, the elderly, right? So we're seeing those that are in the retirement ages and up. One example I think of is this one gentleman came to me at the shelter that I had when I was quarantined in there, was 74 years old. Mm. And here he comes in a walker, homeless, no place to go. Now, you know, God bless, he's now living in a personal care home and he is doing amazing. But before then, this is a 74-year-old. This is my grandfather walking down the streets homeless in a walker. Again, homelessness does not discriminate. It could be anyone. It doesn't matter what color skin you are. It doesn't matter what gender you are. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter what education level you are. I've had people that came through us that were homeless that have no education, to people that have a master's degree. So it does not discriminate. Anyone could be homeless. And that's why it's so important that we take care of this.
And again, when you were mentioning the different demographics there, and you mentioned the women, or in some cases, domestic violence can also be toward men. You also have the children aspect of that as well.
Correct.
And that must add a whole nother dimension to your work.
So we don't deal with children yet. That's not something that we go into, but we have an agency that we can connect to, right? So if a child does come to us, we have agencies that we can connect them to get them the help that they need. But you are correct. There's even children that are homeless. But let's go back to saying families that are homeless. So you have families that are raising kids that are homeless, and there are families that would rather live homeless and be with their family, meaning their children, then go into the system because the system is broken and they have to separate. So the male has to go to a male shelter. The female has to go to a female shelter. And the children get go into foster care. And now you just broke that family up when the family felt more secure and safe being homeless. So there's a lot of issues out there that we need to start addressing, is these families that are homeless, women that are raising kids that are homeless. And then here's one that no one's even talked about. What about fathers that are raising their kids that are homeless?
Exactly.
There's not a lot out there, but there are some out there, and they have only one option if they want to get better. And that is the male has to go into a homeless shelter and the kids have to go into foster care. And you just broke that family up. We got to start thinking smart. I said a little bit ago, the system is broken. We can't fix it until we admit that it's broken. And people don't want to admit that it's broken. We are good at throwing trillions of dollars at a problem. Let's stop putting those money to symptoms. right? People are starving. People don't have food. So let's put trillions of dollars to food banks, and let's get food banks to give out food galore, galore, galore. Give them as much food as we can. That's a symptom, right? The symptom is the food they're going for. Let's put the money towards the problem. Let's find what the exact problem is. I think about this. If you have a broken bone, am I going to put a Band-Aid on it? No. I'm going to put a cast on that broken bone. We got to start putting casts on the homelessness versus putting Band-Aids on this. We got to figure out what that problem is, fix the problem, and then let's get moving forward.
So where do you suppose this problem began? Was it ever not a problem?
Well, homelessness has always been there, right? We've never had no one ever homeless. You're always going to have the homeless population. But why is it growing so rapidly? And I think it's growing so rapidly is because we caused this to happen. Here in society, we started this problem. And how do we start it? We started saying, okay, if you're homeless, we're going to give you food, we're going to give you clothing, we're going to give you money, right? Oh, I see someone on the street begging for money. I'm just going to throw $1, $2 in there. It makes us feel good because we think we're helping them. I've seen multiple times that the money that we hand out to these individuals, they take it and they use it for not good choices. They make bad choices with it. And do I blame them for that? Not at all, because this is what they have learned. This is how they learn to survive. So they'll take that money and they might buy alcohol, right? Or they might buy the drugs, or they might use it to do whatever. They don't buy it to get moving in the right direction for food. So we give them food, right? We give them clothing because, okay, we're not giving them money. And then they rely on us for the food and the clothing. I don't want them to rely on us. I want to put value to all of that relief that we're giving out. And I want to make sure that that value is for them to give them hope and give them a chance to transform their life to make it better. And I think that's where we started falling is we're all about doing the quick fix and throwing that money towards the quick fix. Let's throw the money to making real solid change in transforming their lives. And I think this all started way back. I mean, this started back probably, I would say, back to the 1930s. Because prior to that, who took care of the homeless? Who took care of the poor? Who took care of the widows? You know, it was the church community, and it was the organizations out there that wanted to help. But the church community was a real strong factor in making sure that the people were taken care of. Now, I understand that this doesn't fit for everybody. You know, we talked earlier about this off the air. We talked about that, you know, those that are, you know, that have the mental illness, the severe mental illness and have the severe physical ailments, they need that help. Right. I understand that. Hands down, they need that. But there's majority of the population that needs that opportunity to give them hope and that opportunity for transformation. You know, and I think that's where Keystone Mission wants to succeed in. Keystone Mission used to do that distribution. Don't get me wrong. We used to give out food. We used to give out clothing like you would not believe. And what I got disgusted with for 18 months was seeing the same individuals coming there every single week asking for the same thing and not getting better. And I said, I'm okay with giving that stuff out there as relief to get them through, you know, that hard problem. But I want to start rehabilitating them. I want to start making sure that they can get better and transforming their lives. And that's why I said Keystone Mission is going to take a shift in providing relief to get them to rehabilitate or transform their life to eventually to be developed where they can be sustainable on their own. And that's the direction that Keystone Mission wants to go. We want to help change people's lives. We don't want to help them keep them relying on us to say, okay, we need your food. We need your clothing. We want to make sure that they can be transformed into being sustainable for themselves. And the best part is giving back at the end. Because once they're better, giving back as a role model that I did it, you can do it also.
And have you had the opportunity to talk about this vision that you have and this plan that you have with some of those people who you said were reoccurring, and were they receptive?
So I came up with a strategic plan, like you talked about, and I gave it to business owners. And I said, rip it apart. Tell me what's wrong. Tell me what you think. And they told me their end. And then I gave it to agencies. And I said, tell me what you think about it. Tell me what you think is wrong. They told me their end. And then I gave it to the population that we serve, the homeless population, those that are living in low income, those that are one paycheck away. I tell them, look at it. Tell me what you think. And the most changes that I made was from that population. Because they know what's wrong. They know what they need to get better. They know what the gaps are broken, where the system is broken. And so I readjusted, changed things, did that till I finally have it finalized, and we're now going to go springboard forward with it. There's going to be some good changes going on here at Keystone Mission. We're going to make some really rapid changes to show that we truly care about those that are hurting and move them in the right direction. Wow. But we can't do this alone. We can't do this alone. Keystone Mission can't do this all itself. We need all the agencies that are out there in Luzerne and Lackawanna County that are doing amazing work to partner with us. We want people to go to their mental health providers. We want people to go to their drug and alcohol rehabs and drug and alcohol providers. We want them to go to their career places. We want them to go to the universities and colleges to get better. We want them to go to those housing specialists that can provide apartments and do what they need to do. They're the ones that we're looking for to partner with us hand in hand and make a change for Northeastern Pennsylvania. And guess what? Now we can be a place on the map of this country saying, guess what? Northeastern Pennsylvania cares about their people and truly cares about making them feel better about themselves and giving them hope and transforming their lives all the way from the rich to the poor.
Wow. I can't wait to see what's going to happen next, because all of these are such empowering ideas. What an amazing thing. Hopefully they will all start to come together. Justin, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you would like our listeners to know?
Yeah, I just would say have them come on out to our website. It's www.keystonemission.org. When you go on that website, you're going to see first you're going to see a lot of information. Research it, look through it all. But there's going to be two buttons I think that are important. The first one I'm going to tell you is volunteer. We can't do this without volunteers. If you feel that this is your calling and this is your passion, please click that volunteer button, get in contact with us, and let's get you working with us and helping us help change lives. The other part is, unfortunately, we can't do this without money. And there's that donation page button on there. Click that donation if you feel it's your calling and make a donation. But more importantly than both those combined is pray. I want people to pray for Keystone Mission, and most of all, pray for this community that they live in, because we can't do anything without this prayer.
That's Justin Barron, CEO and Executive Director of Keystone Mission. Next on Special Edition, volunteering with Red Cross. Don't go away. In this segment of Special Edition, we'll introduce you to Grace Palmer. She is the Volunteer Recruitment Specialist with the American Red Cross. How did Grace get her start and end up being the volunteer coordinator?
So I joined the Red Cross back in 2017, actually part-time, working closely with the executive director. I just helped with coordination and basically office management. And I grew to love what I was doing and working closely with the volunteers and their schedules and getting them aligned with what they're wanting to do and what they're passionate about. So I rolled into this position, going on 3 years now as a volunteer recruitment specialist for the Northeastern Pennsylvania area. So we cover 9 counties, which includes Luzerne.
Wow, that is a big area. But I have to say that I don't think you have a very easy job, Grace. I don't think people are knocking down your door saying, Grace, I'd love to help you out. I'd love to be a volunteer. Am I right?
Yes, you're absolutely right, especially during these times that we are facing now.
Wow. So what do you do about that?
Yeah, so we're a lot of our stuff is now digital as far as recruitment. So we're just getting the word out like we are today as much as possible. We're still mission critical. In lieu of COVID and the pandemic, we are still in need of help. We actually run on 90% of our workforce is led by volunteers. So it's very important that we have the people to help fulfill the mission and helping people within the community as well as nationally.
Well, and of course, COVID, part of that, making things difficult for you, because, again, how much more interaction can you get than at a blood drive? And when we hear Red Cross, we think of blood drives. And you have to have volunteers there, because just to get somebody to walk from point A to point B can sometimes be a little bit of a deal if they've never given blood before. So how are you handling that from the volunteer aspect?
Yeah, so what they're called, the volunteers that help at a blood drive, they're called blood donor ambassadors. It speaks for itself. So basically, they're the face of the Red Cross when a donor walks into the door or into that space where the donation is going on. So So they're just greeting them, getting them into the system. Now, because of COVID, it's a little bit different. So they've already kind of went through the questions on their phone, on an app, or online. So basically, the blood donor ambassador is just getting them acclimated, basically walking them through the area, pointing out where they need to be, maintaining the safety protocols that we're following based on CDC guidelines. We're also taking temperatures. So there's the two set of the blood donor ambassadors. So they're welcoming them as well as taking their temperature and asking those questions, COVID-related questions, just making sure that they don't have any symptoms. And then after the donor has donated blood, we want to make sure that they're okay, right? So the volunteers also help and assist with providing them with a snack or a drink. We always have some sort of a sugar just to make sure that they're not lightheaded or feeling any type of way after they've donated blood.
Yes, they're the ones that I always look for because I need somebody to get you from point A to point B sometimes. Yes. when you do things like that. So have you found that the people that you still have on hand as ambassadors, that they have been more willing to come out and help? Because I know there have been an awful lot of blood drives. I just don't know how the response has been.
Yeah, so we have been struggling. A lot of the blood donor ambassadors that help are typically in the elder age. So a lot of them had to stand down for obvious reasons. They're maintaining safety for their own reasons, to remain healthy. So we did lose a lot of volunteers that were willing and able to come out and during this environment that we're dealing with right now. So that's why we're pushing heavier than normal to find volunteers that are comfortable coming out. And like I said, we are following those CDC guidelines. So it's very safe. It's just, it depends on the person and how they're comfortable coming out.
The other thing that we hear a lot about with Red Cross are disasters. It can be a family, and we've had a lot of these in our area as well, have a fire. And all of a sudden, they are without a place to stay. They may be without things.
We're running into pretty much the same issue. We changed it a little bit. Some of our responses have gone to a remote piece as well as in person. We're still responding, obviously. We're still actively needing and looking for volunteers. We are still helping those families that are in need in lieu of COVID, and as well as national with everything else going on. But fires within the local community are still going on, and we're still striving to help those families as best as we can.
Are you able to work now with other organizations who are facing that same challenge and trying to get things for, both parties maybe?
Yes, we always work very closely with other organizations within the community. We also accept donations, monetary donations, so that we can help purchase those sorts of items like hot meals and blankets for the families that are in need, or emergency shelters as well.
And how would someone go about doing that?
So they could go to redcross.org/gifts. So that's redcross.org/gifts. And then they can go ahead and plug in their monetary donation that way. And it helps to provide the necessities during the emergency.
When you are looking and actively recruiting volunteers, where can they go for the opportunity to get in touch with you? Is there a way that they could do that and find out what they could do?
They would basically go to the same place. It's redcross.org. Except it's /volunteer. The application is online. It takes about 5 to 7 minutes to complete. They just plug in their personal information, run through a few questions, create a user ID, and someone within our volunteer services department will be in contact with them to further discuss what their interests are and align them with what they're looking to do.
Where else do you need volunteers, Grace?
So everywhere. That's a funny question. Within the Luzerne County area, I'm within the greater Pennsylvania region, so all throughout Pennsylvania and any state, someone can volunteer. The great thing about our application is when they go to redcross.org/volunteer, when a prospective volunteer goes to complete their application, they can search by their residential zip code for opportunities that are available that are near to them. So it's not just helping out a blood drive. They can help in disaster in many types of ways. even as we just spoke about earlier, responding to a local fire. The other thing with blood services that we're actively looking for, specifically in the Luzerne County area for Ashley Blood Center, are transportation specialists. And they help to deliver life-saving blood. So what they would do is pick up the blood and transport it to where it needs to go. It's very safe. In most cases, you're all by yourself. So maintaining those safety precautions.
You know, you did mention that you're involved with how many counties?
Nine counties.
And some of those counties are, there's a little bit of space between folks. How have you been working in that area? I mean, there was good because of COVID, so you didn't have a lot of people together. But at the same time, in your organization, sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get to where you might need people to go.
So it really depends. We have volunteers everywhere in rural areas and more city-based areas. So depending on the location of the disaster or the blood drive, we would reach out to those volunteers within those areas, and then we just kind of span out from there if we don't have those people that are available at that time in that area. And as far as recruitment, we're reaching everywhere, all organizations and churches. We're also, you can find us everywhere online. We're posting our volunteer opportunities on websites such as Indeed and Volunteer Match.
Do you also, you must have social media.
We are definitely on social media. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram and also LinkedIn.
So before I let you go, is there anything, first of all, that we've left out that you want to make sure our listeners know?
Thank you for anybody that has already given into the mission, whether you're volunteering, donating blood, or donating monetary donations to the Red Cross. We're looking forward to bringing on more wonderful people to join our team, whether, like I said, you're donating or you're volunteering. We are welcoming you with open doors.
That was one thing I should have asked you. What are the ages as far as being volunteers?
So in most cases, you could start as young as 13 years old. Prior to COVID, we had a lot of events where a lot of the younger youth got involved. Obviously, that's kind of changed a little bit. But as far as like volunteering at a blood drive, for instance, you need to be 18 to take the to screen somebody. So like their temperature and asking those questions. But they could be 16 years old and older to volunteer at a blood drive.
And I'm sure that on the other side, there is no limit.
Oh, no.
Are there things that people can do as volunteers, maybe behind the scenes in the building, answering a phone, or within the organization itself?
So actually within volunteer services, we have a few opportunities that are remote. You could do it from home, as long as you have access to a computer, phone. There's many ways that you could get involved. We have other departments that from time to time, they look for volunteers to help. So they don't have to leave their comfort of their home. On my team as well, like we're doing mailing. So the volunteers are helping with that in the comfort of their home. They don't have to go anywhere. Making those phone calls, connecting with those volunteers, helping with engagement. There's so many different ways that you could get involved without physically going anywhere.
That's great. And how do we find out about those?
So it would be on the same place, so redcross.org/volunteer. And then some of the opportunities they would state on there, you know, would be basically from home. One of them is like a volunteer screener. You're basically interviewing volunteers that come through the application process and getting to know them. It's a quick few-minute phone call with them and aligning them with what they want to get involved with.
They have an opportunity to select. It's not like you say, you have to go here, you have to go here. They can put in their preferences. Grace, give us all that information one more time. If anybody wants to make a donation, if anybody would like to get involved at some point in time doing something, how do they find you?
So you would go to redcross.org/gift. Gift if you would like to donate a monetary donation. You could also go to redcrossblood.org if you're interested in donating blood. And as far as volunteering and getting involved in other ways, you could do redcross.org/volunteer. And of course, if you just go to redcross.org, all of those options will be right there for you, so you don't have to remember the backslash.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Intercom Communications.